You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Monday, so it's time for Shapiro World with David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities in Johannesburg. David, it's a short week in the United States this week, or rather a long weekend. That's the way I'd prefer to look at it. And therefore, it's going to be quiet. People will wind down on Wednesday. They won't come in on Friday. Then, of course, you've got Black Friday. So maybe next week we'll have a look at some of the initial results of Black Friday coming through and have a look at the retailers, because you'd like a couple of retailers in the United States. But meanwhile, there's been a lot of stories that you've alerted me to on the JSE today, and some interesting ones. So maybe we have a sort of a local-centric chat now. What was the main one that stuck out?
Number one is Boxer, and it oversubscribed significantly. And I think what it does highlight is just how starved we are for something new, that this comes out of Pick and Pay camp. It's been in the Pick and Pay camp.
Yeah.
But I think the fact that it's going on its own, there was a huge energy behind the subscriptions. What's quite interesting, just to do the numbers without wanting to confuse people, because when you talk about so many numbers, people can't get them around their head. But what it does mean is that the shares will be issued at 54 Rand, which gives Boxer a underlying value of 24.7 billion. Now, why I say that is that if you look at Pick and Pay, it has a value of like 21.7 billion, which means that investors are valuing Pick and Pay at a minus 3 billion rand valuation.
Let's just explain what Boxer is, because we've never really mentioned the name in many years of speaking together. It's a discount brand, isn't it? It's a standalone when it comes to stores. It's not a store within a store. It's a store in its own. And I remember seeing a Boxer when I used to live out in the sticks for a year. But you won't see a Boxer in Sandton, for example.
No. It's designed at the low end of the market, a much more limited range of product, mainly subsistence type products, But it's where the money is, particularly for so many people who are on social grants. And so it's designed for that area of the market rather than the Woolworths or the upper Checkers stores today. So it's been very well received, and the outlook is very positive.
Good.
So Pick and Pay, being under the supreme pressure that they are under, have decided to IPO, in other words, put Boxer on the market as a separate listing. It wasn't an unbundling. In other words, if you held Pick and Pay, you didn't automatically get Boxer shares. You had to apply for them. So Pick and Pay is selling off about 30-odd percent or a third of their holding.
So they're still the majority shareholder.
Yes, Pick and Pay is a majority shareholder, and they're selling off or listing a third of the shares, and down the line, obviously, more of those shares will come into the pot. So very well received. But it will be listed on Thursday. When I say the listing was 54 Rand a share, it gives the valuation of the company, it translates into a valuation of 24 and a half billion, say. Pick and Pay, which owns 100% of Boxer at the moment, is only valued at, say, 21 billion.
Yeah.
So there's a deficit in what the market thinks Pick and Pay is. In fact, it's more of a liability. So at the end, without getting too complicated, Pick and Pay issue these shares.
Yes.
Or have issued these shares to the public. They will receive 8.5 billion. And they will retain two-thirds or 300 million of Boxer shares. And then they still have, obviously, all the Pick and Pay operations. So we'll see what happens in the next few days.
So this is a shot in the arm for Pick and Pay. And obviously one of the first really major events since, gosh, what's his name now, came back at a very late age.
Sean Summers.
Sean Summers, exactly, yes. It's probably his most consequential contribution to Pick and Pay since resuming as CEO, I think.
Yes. And it, what it means is that this is separate, as you say. It's a separate operation, even though Pick and Pay will be still a significant shareholder, owning two-thirds. But it will be run. It doesn't take the pressure of Sean Summers, who now has to try and turn around the pick and pay operations. As I say, the market at the moment is attributing a negative value to the pick and pay, to what remains of pick and pay outside of Boxer.
And what is the pick and pay? What's the been? You say it's been well received. I mean, it's oversubscribed. I mean, the Boxer shares, and so whenever it lists, it should be a good IPO. But what has pick and pay done today in reaction to this?
It's been in the news for some time, so there hasn't been any major reaction yet. It's been building up for some time. As the news came out of this unbundling, so I think most of it has been priced into the market already. So, the pressures, I think people are going to focus now on Boxer and maybe take the pressure off Pick and Pay. They've got money now to offset their debt. And I think what will happen, I call it an order, ATM, an order bank. I think what is going to happen is that as and when they need more cash, they'll sell off more shares into the market.
Okay, what else do we have today? We had Invicta. Invicta Holdings. There's nothing there.
Yes, I looked at it. Look, it's nothing major to report there, but it does also reflect difficult conditions. Without getting into too much detail, because I like the company, I know the management there, but they did complain about a stronger rand, which means obviously they're exporting, maybe into Africa, into other countries where they're receiving dollars, which are now haven't got the same value as the same positive value in the rand, that the rand has improved slightly over the last few months.
What else do we have? Netcare Limited. That share price is down 1%. We haven't spoken about the healthcare, the hospital industry for quite a while, David. It's gone a little bit quiet. Has it been under the cosh? Because that's when I think of it, when I think of pharma and when I think of hospitals in South Africa and the listings, I always think, it hasn't done very well recently. Is that the case? Without, I'm generalizing, obviously. But would you say it's been a sector to avoid recently? And when I say recently, the last couple of years.
What's happening is that membership of medical aids is declining or flat. So if that's the case, it means that there are less people, or the number of people who will use these hospitals remains the same. People are not increasing membership of medical aid. I know there's a National Health Service that could be introduced, not going to happen. Simply, they haven't got enough money, and there are a whole lot of complications around that. But I think it's a very tough industry. It's a well-run industry. I must say, our hospital groups are really good. The private hospital groups. But you're operating in a very difficult environment. You're operating in an economy that's not going anywhere. It's just basically stagnating. Lindsay, the one thing we do love in this country, we love to talk ourselves up and we love to look at the headlines. And I'm not, every day is like a Springbok victory, but it's not really like that. Mm-hmm. If you understand what I'm saying. And I'm not trying to be cynical or negative. I'm just saying this is a tough country. Whenever people ask me about South Africa, I'll say when you've got 40% unemployment and even higher unemployment amongst the youth, you've got issues. In other words, whatever money you make, you have to direct in that, it has to be directed to those areas. Otherwise, you're going to have widespread riots, which means you're taking away from growing, from growing in the economy. And we're going to come on to that when we look at Murray and Roberts. And other companies in the construction industry. So we have big issues. You know what I'm saying? I explain it by saying if there are 10 people, you meet 10 adults in a street.
Three and a half of them are unemployed.
Four of them are unemployed. Mm. Six have got jobs, four of which, I think Viv said this, four of which have got menial jobs. And it means there are only two that have got decent jobs. So the six have to support those four in health, in education, in housing, in feeding, whatever.
There is an informal economy as well, David, which I think does account for, I don't know what significant, if it's a significant number, but there is an informal economy that's under the statistical radar, isn't there?
It is. It's an informal economy that just ticks over. Do you know what I mean? It's an informal trading economy. It's not the kind of informal economy that's going to build a tower to the, you know, to the moon or anything. There's not going to be anything that comes under other than just survival.
It's only certain very freaky people that want to build towers to the moon. I'm talking about driving through township, which I used to do regularly when I lived in Cape Town, and seeing people by the side of the road with a small shop or a chap cutting hair and that sort of thing. Mm. They're not going to go to the tax office and say, this is what I've earned in November. So it is a reality, especially when there are still so many people in so-called informal settlements. So they do stuff. They're not documented, I don't think. Maybe I'm talking out of turn.
No, you're not. No, there is that economy. And it's more a survival economy, more an old type, you know, chap on the side of a road, earns a little bit of money by helping you park your car and looking after it, you know, and he goes and he's able to buy a little bit of food and so on. But we're not talking about an economy that's going to create thousands of jobs, you know, real jobs where people can... where we produce things that we're going to sell overseas and help grow this economy. Even if you look at what the Reserve Bank says, you know, the growth projections are very, very low, you know, extremely low for us to get out of it. And as long as we're growing at that very low level, other countries who are growing faster are streaming ahead of us, you know, or moving ahead of us. So I'm that's the reality. I'm not here to talk down the country. I'm saying those are the issues we have to address. You know, how do we create jobs? How do we re-employment?
It's been the same ever since I was in South Africa. I arrived in 1988, left in 2016, and every year unemployment got worse and worse and worse. I think it was something like 22-23% when I arrived, which is shocking for someone coming from Britain. And now it's, I think officially, last week, the rate was 32.1% or something like that, David. You're quoting around a 40% level, but...
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. It's a huge number.
It doesn't matter. Yeah, it's decimal points. But it's... I think it's close. You know, there are a lot of people that are not counted, you know, that just don't even apply for jobs. But, Lindsay, where we're going on, and I'll bring it up, is that Murray and Roberts, which was an iconic building firm, which was a powerhouse of a business a few decades ago.
And a big part of the JSC that you remember.
Huge. You know, in 2010 it built, or just pre-2010, it built the Gautrain and was a member of the Bombela Consortium. So it was a significant powerhouse in construction. It's gone into business rescue. Now, that follows Group 5, which has gone in, Basil Reed, Avenge, which has shrunk to a very, very small company and is now in Australia, is now mainly in Australia. So we've seen the complete destruction of our construction industry. And it gives you, it just reinforces what I'm saying, that there's been no money that has gone into the development of this economy, building the infrastructure that is so necessary to, you know, to create a foundation on which you can grow an economy. And it's a tragic story.
What is it? It's just, obviously the demise. I mean, the last time it probably had some good times was, I don't know, World Cup and the Bombela Consortium building of the Gautrain, which you've just mentioned. Ever since then, it's been in quite rapid decline, actually. But you're an accountant and a scholar of business practices. What does business rescue mean?
It means that you can't. You've got liquidity issues. You're not necessarily bankrupt. You've got liquidity issues. You can't pay your creditors. You haven't got working capital. And business rescue comes in and starts negotiating with your creditors and says, listen, we need time. We need time to, you know, concentrate on other businesses or just help us, you know, just give us time to get things right, after which we'll negotiate with our creditors, do something, go back to business. There are companies that Tongaat is in that situation now. SAA was in that situation, you know, South African Airways. So there have been a number of businesses that have been in business rescue. So it's Chapter 11 in the United States. It's just buying time. you know, it's you don't want to you don't want to go to the courts and be liquidated, you know, and distribute assets and lay off people. So there are consequences by, you know, by going into bankruptcy. It means that, you know, people lose their jobs, thousands of people are put on the streets. So, yeah.
One day you'll have to explain to me the difference between a business rescue, bankruptcy, insolvency, and all those sort of measures that a company can put into place just to say, listen, we're not throwing in the towel, but things are pretty grim. David, yes. Supergroup, it's all to do with Australia, the share price reacting very nicely. Tell us about that. Know. You're practically Australian.
I'll be there. I'm surprised that, you know, this is, they've got quite a few operations. They're in what, the logistics, distributorships or dealerships, and they're also in fleet management. So this is a fleet management business that they've got in Australia. I'm surprised that the, you know, I don't know enough about it to understand why this deal has created a 15% gain in Supergroup. You know, I know it's, you know, from my point of view, I always regarded Australia as maybe 15-20% of the business at max, not even. So I think the fact that they might be getting some cash, and they only owned about 50% of this business, or just over 50%. But I need to go through the numbers.
So what you're saying is another company is taking out SG Fleet, which is the Australian division Supergroup. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So that's the, you know, it's an Australian business that has been taken over by there's a private equity business or some equity business that wants to buy it out. So, okay. But anyway, listen, it's the market's reacted very positively. I've got to go through all the numbers to say, well, you know, why? What does this translate? I haven't done all of those calculations yet. You know, Australian dollars 350 times what it is in their balance sheet and so on. But anyway.
Okay, well, surely the market likes it. Maybe it's a desperate market, as you say. People are desperate for something new, so they subscribe for books, and they get a little bit of good news out of Supergroup and whack the price up. And as you probably quite rightly say, probably a little bit exaggerated on the upside. And Anglo American is another bit of news. They're generating $4.9 billion cash proceeds from its sale of its steel-making coal business. We've known about that for ages, but the share price likes
it. They need to do all of this, hey? Yeah. You know, they've got to keep doing that, Lindsay. I think this is a mining house under severe pressure. They won't admit it. You know, as I say, we always talk up. We always talk up things. So, but I think that if you look at where commodity prices are, they're not exactly running away. We thought that we'd be in a far better position than we were at the moment, particularly with China, you know, stimulating its economy, but not happening. And I'm still betting that Mike Henry of BHP is just sitting there with his feet on the desk waiting, you know, for that mandatory 6 months to expire, and he's coming again. And I think in this case, Anglo will probably take it. You know, the iron ore price is hovering around 100. The copper price is no longer that 1100. It's now down at just over 9000. And there's no suggestion that things are really going to run away. You know, so my view is, you know, I think he's going to, you know, Anglo will look at it again. And they're under huge, look, one of the reasons that Marion Roberts is in business rescue is that it had a mining contract with Venetia, yes, which is a big De Beers mine, you know, which is in the Anglo stable. And they suspended it, you know, they put it into care and maintenance or suspended operations because they're obviously not selling diamonds or it's not cost effective. And that was punishment for Marion Roberts. So De Beers is under a lot of pressure. Anglo's, we saw a change of government in Botswana because of De Beers, you know, because of the slump in the diamond market. So they've got that on their heads as well. You know, platinum price is not doing, copper price is down, iron ore price down. So I think there's plenty of pressure on Anglo's.
Barlow World came out with results. So. Anything there, David? Barlow World, another one that we don't really talk about that often.
Now that's very interesting as well, because Barlow's has been around, I mean, for generations now. It was a huge business, not only involved in industry but also in mining. And today it's down to selling yellow metal, which is Caterpillar, you know, equipment yes. to it's quite widespread, you know, it sells it into Africa, so it's got its African operation, but it's also got Russia and Mongolia. And what's happened now, and it's only come through, we're getting the details, is that there's a bid to take it off. And the bid, in other words, a deal to try and take it off the market, to buy it, to go private. But that's being pushed by management in a consortium together with a Saudi Arabian company. So a lot of questions being asked. You know, hold on a sec, there's interested parties here. You know, is this a fair price they're going to give us? Because we see the results coming out are bad. So obviously you're going to get all the bad results coming out, push the price down, make it cheaper to take it off. So a lot of questions being asked about this particular deal. But the results came out, which were kind of expected in a difficult environment. Their big problems, they've got a big operation in Russia, you know, and Mongolia, which is being, you know, question marks are being asked by the auditors. They've got to sign off the accounts, and they're saying this is, you know, there are lots of issues there, particularly with the rest of the world looking on.
Yes, exactly. I mean, and never mind how much money they do or don't make because of the state of the Russian economy, which we'll never know, because Russia seems to be doing quite all right, thanks, despite sanctions. The ethical and moral issues of still doing business there. I mean, everyone else has pulled out. Why is Barlow World still there? I don't know.
We don't know that. And that's another question about this whole going private. Do you think that if you go private, if it's owned by a Saudi Arabian-based company, you know, that you can bypass all these things, you know, continue to flush out the cash or use the cash that's coming from Russia? But they, you know, it's mainly Caterpillar equipment that they sell in those areas and service. Obviously, they're not selling anything new, but they might be servicing the old. So I don't fully grasp what is, you know, what is happening there. But maybe, you know, a lot has to do with this.
Okay.
Lots of questions.
Yeah, lots of questions and talking about that, and it's in a way linked to the mining industry, I think. But anyway, I'm just looking at the JSE board. We don't need to go through that because it's not the 5 o'clock shadow. Oh, look at this. Implats down nearly 7%. Yeah. Sibania down nearly 5%. Harmony down nearly 5%. Goldfields 4.4%. Yeah. Anglo Platinum down 3.7%. Getting hammered. So the resources index must be down nearly 2%, I suppose.
Mm. And this is Russia. I mean, this is China.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of negative views coming through on China. And, you know, without Chinese interest, there's plenty of pressure on the commodity market. So I think a lot has to do with it. There was the view that Trump now with his, you know, not dig, 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 what's it, drill, 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 that there'd be an expanded demand for platinum because you'd have hybrid cars and they'd still be using, you know, gas guzzlers will still be in fashion there. But we haven't seen it in the price. It's not coming through. You know, it's not. You would think that traders would position themselves, but it's not coming through, Lindsay. It's still very, very vulnerable.
I must have a look at the resources index and just see where it is. I know it's not at the lows it's been of late, but on the other hand, it can't be looking good. I mean, these are really, really big moves from significant companies in a South African context. I think. Let me see if I can click on my resources. Incidentally, the resources 20 index is down 2.25%, let's call it. So I'm going to double click on this thing. And I have to sign up to get the graph. You've probably got one at some stage, but I mean,
I'm looking at the Bloomberg composite.
Yeah.
You know, and I just look at the trend. You know?
Are you looking at the prices or are you looking at the shares?
No, I'm looking at the index, just the index itself.
I see.
And wherever I look, if I look at Brent oil, the trend is from the top left to bottom right. You know,
yeah.
Copper kind of goes sideways, but it's not making any breakthrough. Gold is the only one that looks good. Platinum gone sideways for years, which is not a good sign, you know. And palladium on the down. Iron ore also pointing down, you know, nickel pointing down, hard wheat pointing down, you know, all of those are in the same direction. They're trying to turn around, but there's been no decisive break, you know, break of that downtrend. And when I look at the Bloomberg Commodity Index as well, there was a kick up, and not at the moment. It still looks. I'm trying to expand the graph to get more detail, but it still looks pretty awful. So we just haven't seen it. You know, it's just not just not turning around. So anyway, that's a worry, and we come back to Anglo-American. It must be a worry for them. I know they'll talk up, and they're just probably praying that something does happen.
Yeah, exactly. David, I'm just trying to get this. Okay, so I've got the JSE Resources 10 streaming chart, according to investing.com, and it says here, the low of the year, or actually the recent low, was 51,200, let's call it. It's currently 55,841. So it's well off its lows, which was in September. And now then it recovered again, and now it's heading down. It's a very choppy graph. I mean, that's the nature of commodities. But I have to say, if you looked at that and you said to somebody, this is a graph, what do you think of it? They'd say, nah, too volatile.
Yeah.
I'm not going to touch this.
Yeah. No, that's the worry. You know, we've been trying to call the bottom for some time. And it just keeps going longer and longer. And, you know, if you're in the industry and you've got to make decisions, it's a very difficult time.
Okay. David, let's talk about other things now. It's Thanksgiving coming up and Black Friday. And I did hint at the fact that next week we'll probably talk about a few of the preliminary results that come in. It's terribly important, isn't it? And it's almost as though Black Friday has taken away from the year end, or people still call it Christmas, but apparently it's politically incorrect to say Christmas period, but I'll still say it. It dilutes away from the peak spending time, which has always traditionally been Christmas time, but still important to the retailers, both events.
Yeah, very important. And I think globally we're going to watch what comes out of Black Friday, whether there is an appetite to go out and spend and do things. I watch the adverts, and I've got to be honest, I haven't seen any madness. And I get all the American adverts as well, because every time I go there and you buy something, they say, give me your email address. I'll give my wife's email address, because otherwise you're just flooded with junk and you know, promotions. But I mean, I haven't seen an enormous amount of promotion. I'm sure there will be, and I'm sure there'll be spending. Locally, I'm worried here as well. You know, I've seen very little. I think it's very muted response. And I must say, I went to, on Friday, we had a luncheon, and this is where I'm going on spending. We had a luncheon, which was a farewell for Wayne. Julieta was there, Simon, Bright, myself. And we were at a very popular restaurant.
You know, which one? Tell me.
Mestre Antoni, which is a superb restaurant.
Yeah,
that's a lovely restaurant.
Isn't that in Ilova, isn't it?
Ilova, yeah.
Yes, great, I remember.
Food. I'm not, and it was a Friday. You know, Friday, you normally have business lunches. People want to go out and eat, feel that they can rest the rest of the afternoon, whatever it is. Just people kind of, you know, it was, call it 50% full, maybe slightly more, but there wasn't a buzz. You know what I mean? There wasn't a buzz around that. And I'm not pointing out that this has anything to do with the food. It's completely opposite, because it is popular. So I just don't think people were going out. And it's year end as well. That concerned me a little bit, because I think, you know, there was other anecdotal evidence as well of very quiet Friday restaurants, or very quiet fare. So I'm a bit worried that, you know, people are battling here. You know, they just haven't got that discretionary spend that they used to have. And I think even over Black Friday, we might not see the numbers that we're all anticipating. We thought that this two-pot system would produce a lot. It's not coming through in any recognizable way at the moment.
Yeah, maybe off long-standing debts or something, rather than saying, well, I've had a bit of a windfall, let's go out and splash. Mind you, it's only November the 25th. It's exactly one calendar month to Christmas. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I get confused. I don't shop anymore anyway. Do you shop a lot? Do you buy presents?
No. That's the whole point. Is that, you know, I take myself as an example. Not at all.
Never.
You know, I've got no desire to go in and shop. You know, and that's all. And you know, I'm not saying I was never a shopper, but you know, I'd always like to go and see something else, it's a new running shorts or something like a new running shoes. You know, you've changed our habits, but not at all.
But you buy presents for whatever festival you observe. You buy presents for your kids and grandkids, don't you? Or not?
Not over Christmas, but just over year end, yes.
Okay.
And, you know, we'll spend that kind of amount, but I haven't seen that absolute, you know, push to go out and spend. And I think maybe people are going on holiday and spending it on other things other than buying things. Mm-hmm. But Lindsay, it's going to be, you know, you're on something there that we've got to monitor what's happening. And
you really have to. I mean, if I'm an example, then the retail industry would be on its knees by now, because I haven't received or given a Christmas present probably for 31 years, I think. It's the last one I got. And that was a mistake. As for Christmas cards, gosh, I can remember my parents having strings all around the house.
Yep.
And they used to hang the Christmas cards on strings. Yeah. There were, you know, dozens of the blasted things. But now, there's nothing like that. It's very strange. David, football over the weekend. Thank goodness it's back after the two-week international break.
Yeah.
Well done, Arsenal. Very, very good. And looks as though they'll be moving into second quite soon, the way that City are playing.
They were all right. You know, they're fine. They still need a striker.
Mm.
But it was good to see Odegaard back and a couple of chaps back. I think out of all the teams, I've got to say, they were the only one that got through easily.
Yes.
You know, the big teams. They're the only ones who never battled. You know, if you looked at Liverpool, they battled. You know, they weren't, yes, they're winning and they're 8 points ahead. But, you know, they never got onto the field and just kind of romped home. It was really a struggle. And with a little help from the opposition that they managed to win that game. So Man City, I don't know, Lindsay, you've got to tell me. You know, it just seems that
they're so tired. They are. And also, they've got some good young players like Rico Lewis, and even Haaland is still relatively young. He's not even 25 yet. But it's an aging squad. I mean, Kyle Walker, he's not as fast as he used to be. Kevin De Bruyne, he's just not the man he was. He's not as incisive as he used to be. I don't know. They just seem to be a little bit lacking in energy and lacking in guile and lacking in ideas. And you can see it with Pep as well when he sits on the bench and he's rubbing his bald head. And even his interviews afterwards, it's almost an interview of resignation, not resigning from the team, but he's resigned to the fact that things are going bad. And he's lost that oomph, that zest for management.
Yeah. I think Ferguson would have blasted the team.
Mm.
You know, he would never have stood for something like that. But you're dead right. You know, it happens. I think they are aging, but they're also resting on their laurels. And then it'll come back next week, and next week it doesn't come back. No, and they're not doing the basics. You know, I looked at Gundogan. What's it, Gundogan?
Yeah,
Gundogan. Why did they buy him? Why did they get him back? You know, he went to Real Madrid. They came back. You know, that's
Barcelona.
Never.
He went to Barcelona, you know, David, not Real Madrid. You mustn't say
Barcelona.
Those two names in the same sentence, please. because he was a free transfer. They didn't buy him. They brought him back. And it was, at the time, people said, gosh, what a coup. But he's done nothing. Again, aging.
So, they were just run ragged by Spurs.
I saw a comment at half time and said, thank goodness we're 2-0 down to Spurs, so at least we've got a chance, you know. two more goals later. No, gosh. It was a tragic thing. And my team, of course, was the standout performance of the weekend.
They were superb.
Yeah, they were very good.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know what? You saw the difference. They tried, they battled. There was a little bit of skills lacking there, I think, which will come of age, you know, not being in the division. There was this quest for glory, and a lot of times that they broke through. I think they could have just slowed it down, look for a decisive pass instead of going for glory. But still, I think Man United, with all the build up for the new management, I think he's got a big job on his hands.
Huge job. This is not going to be a one season turnaround. I can tell you that now.
No.
David, very finally, I noticed there was some birdsong in the background earlier on in this podcast, and I know you're 77, but you haven't gone and bought yourself a budgie, have you?
No, I've got a big garden, not me, the building's got a big expanse of lawn outside, and they're the hardy dars, they're the plovers, they're the Indian miners, lots of mossies, lots of that swing around here. And I love the starlings. I love when the starlings come back. You know, those are the bottle green birds.
Yes.
But even now, yeah. So there's always birdies here.
Okay. And very, very finally, you see those swarms of starlings on winter nights in particular. Rome is one city which is famous for all the starlings getting together, and before they go to roost somewhere and they take over a certain areas of Rome.
Are you kidding?
You've seen them on television. It's like a wave of birds. They all collect together.
Oh, that one, yes.
Yeah. Do you know what the name of that is? Do you know what they call it? It's a something of starlings. You don't know?
I don't.
Okay, no. If it ever comes up in a pub quiz, it's a murmuration of starlings.
A murmuration?
A murmuration of starlings. There you go. I've taught you something.
And they do it at all speed. I mean, it's
incredible.
It's incredible that, I know the one you're talking about.
Yes. Good.
But I love the starlings here,
Okay, well done. David, good luck in the Champions League tomorrow night, away to Sporting, I think you are. City at home to Feyenoord. And the big one on Wednesday, Liverpool-Real Madrid, which will be absolutely fantastic. Can't wait for that one. Good. Okay. David, thank you very much for your time, as always. You'll be back on Thursday with Viv for the 5 o'clock shadow. That was David Shapiro from Sassman Securities, and that was Shapiro World. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.